Welcome back to React Native Radio Podcast. Brought to you by Pampers, the try-catch of the baby world. Episode 226, GraphQL with Eve Porcello.
Jamin, I'm really excited about this episode. Before we get started, can I play a little song for you?
A song? Okay, so this is a little out of the ordinary, but yeah, let's go ahead and let's play the song. That sounds good.
All right, let me cue it up.
Welcome back, Robin, to your neighborhood of software engineers. Welcome back.
Wait, what are you saying, Mazen? What exactly is Derek singing there in that song?
Robin's back.
Robin's back. Robin.
I'm back.
Welcome back. You're back. Yay. Where have you been? We've been looking for you everywhere.
And you want the fun story or the real story?
Both.
Well, that's too bad. I don't have a fun story.
Okay. Well, what's the real story?
I had a baby.
You had a baby.
I had a baby.
Oh, congratulations. You had a little boy.
Yep. His name is Peter. He's mm-hmm. pretty much the cutest thing I've ever seen.
Can confirm. I've seen photos.
That's a fact.
Yep. We're still working on sleeping.
Yeah.
But that'll come.
Yeah. It's, you know, I have four kids. I know what that's like. It's, this is your second kid, right?
Yes. Second kid.
How's your oldest dealing with having a new baby?
She loves him. She can't wait to actually be able to boss him around. He doesn't really listen to her yet.
Yeah. Classic. Takes after his mom.
Uh-huh.
That's pretty awesome. Well, congratulations again. We're so happy to have you back, though. It's great. In fact, we've been getting tweets. When's Robin going to be back? So.
Well, I feel so loved.
Derek made that song, and Mazen, thanks for playing it. Derek wrote that song in a day. It's patterned after another song, Welcome Back, by who was it?
Well, it's the theme song from Welcome Back, Cotter.
Welcome Back, Cotter. Yes. But I think it originally was, yeah, anyway, it doesn't matter. But it's a great old song. The lyrics of the original song are pretty funny too. And Derek took it and put his own twist on it. It was perfect. Love it. Derek Greenberg, he is, of course, our guest coordinator. And of course, now apparently our official musician of the podcast. Love it.
He's the Lin-Manuel Miranda of React Native Radio.
It's perfect. We needed one. I'm Jamin Holmgren, your host, friendly CTO of Infinite Red. And I'm joined today by my fine co-hosts.
Fine.
So you can read that in a few different ways. Fine.
Just yeah, like, fine?
Okay. Just fine. Okay.
Well, we were shocked that you hadn't used fine yet. Of all the crazy words you've used, fine.
It's just fine.
Well, you said that I'd be running out of synonyms, but you know, I'm digging a little deep into the barrel of these, and I may have to start reusing them at some point.
I mean, aren't we all like just fine right now?
I hope you're fine. I hope everybody in the audience is fine right now.
This is fine.
Doing fine.
This is fine. Everything's fine.
Robin Heinz, welcome back, and Mazen Chami. Robin Heinz is a senior software engineer located in Portland, Oregon, works at Infinite Red, specializes in React Native and raising very cute little kids. How are you doing, Robin?
You know, I'm doing well. I didn't get a lot of sleep last night, but coffee is a great savior.
A wonder drug. Mazen, of course, is a co-host as well. He works at Infinite Red, is a senior React Native engineer, lives in Durham, North Carolina, former pro soccer player and coach, and has been kind of holding down the fort with me while Robin's been gone. I really appreciate it, Mazen. How are you doing?
Glad Robin's here. Now I can kind of take the back seat again.
I don't think that's going to happen. You've been doing great. Not only do we have Robin back, but we have an amazing special guest today, and I cannot wait to introduce her, and I will in just a second, but I do have to say this episode is sponsored by Infinite Red. Infinite Red is a premier React Native design development agency located fully remote in the US and Canada. If you're looking for React Native expertise for your next React Native project, hit us up. You can learn more on our website, infinite.red/react-native, and don't forget to mention that you heard about us through the React Native Radio podcast. And also, we are hiring, as you heard Derek say in the song. We have grown a bit since Robin has left. And in fact, we are needing developers so badly that we had Robin go off and make another one for us, which was very nice of her to do. It's going to take a little bit, though, to get that one turned around. But you can go to careers.infinite.red if you are a senior React Native engineer living in the US or Canada. So our guest today is Eve Porcello. That's how you told me to pronounce it. So that's how I'm pronouncing it.
No Italians in the audience.
Apparently, yes. Eve is the co-founder of Moon Highway, which is an awesome name, by the way. I love it. A curriculum development and training company where she teaches JavaScript, GraphQL, and React training workshops to tech professionals around the world. She creates courses for LinkedIn Learning and Egghead, and is the co-author of Learning React and Learning GraphQL from O'Reilly Media, which is very impressive. I know, like, O'Reilly's kind of like the gold standard. So you not only have your stamp on one of them, but two awesome books. That's pretty awesome, Eve. How are you doing?
I'm great. I'm so happy to be here today. Thanks for having me. And yeah. I co-wrote both those books with my husband / coworker, Alex Banks. So technically, I've only written one. So I appreciate these compliments, but I can't fully take it. Yeah.
You know, as a fellow co-founder, I put my name on everything and I take credit for everybody's work. That's just how it works.
Of course.
That's what you're supposed to do.
Oh, certainly. And I definitely do that.
So our topic today and why we're bringing you in is GraphQL. And as mentioned, you wrote the book on GraphQL, which is awesome. We're going to specifically talk more about GraphQL in React Native. Of course, we're the React Native Radio podcast, so we want to talk about that. But we're also going to talk a little more generally about GraphQL. A lot of the stuff we talk about will be applicable to both React.js web and React Native projects. Sometimes, in some cases, there may be slight differences, but that's the beauty of React Native, is a lot of times it applies across the board. So I will say there are a number of React Native radio episodes about GraphQL, but we haven't done any since Infinite Red took over the podcast. So people can go back and listen to those past episodes if they want, but it's about time that we approach this ourselves. So Eve, I first want to maybe have you start off, maybe tell us a bit about your background, how you got into coding, how you got into, you know, teaching and all that.
Yeah, so I got into programming maybe 10 years ago when we moved to Lake Tahoe area. There were no jobs here at all. This was before people could work remotely. And so my husband was trying to get me into programming. I was working in program management, product management, and he's like, you should work with me for a couple years. And I always said, no, I'll never do that. And then we moved here where there's no jobs. And I was like, yeah, I guess I have to at this point. Got into programming as kind of a JavaScript front-end person who was working on client projects, small websites and things like that. And then got into training because we live 3 hours or so away from the Bay Area where there's tons of training opportunities there. So I got into teaching Node.js at PayPal when they were first adopting it, and got lucky with learning React fairly early too, because we were teaching at Yahoo and they were saying, hey, we're transferring all of our YUI code to React. And we're like, we better figure out what React is. So we got the inside track on that kind of early, which was pretty cool. But teaching and programming have kind of gone hand in hand, and we work on a lot of curriculums for these types of things too, so that other trainers can teach what we have created. And that allows us to kind of spread out because there's only a couple of us working here, so we can have other people teach our content.
That's awesome. We've done some level of teaching ourselves, but developing curriculum is a lot more work than it looks like. and it's very difficult.
Definitely a full-time job.
Oh, man. Yeah. So that's pretty awesome. I really love that.
Yeah. I think developing curriculum feels like something you do once and it's like, this class is done. And then everything changes and you have to move everything to a new tool or a new technology. So yeah, it's ongoing. Definitely a full-time job.
So I think it probably makes sense to start off our conversation about GraphQL with just like, what is it? Sort of for our listeners that may not know, sort of what is GraphQL and how did you come across it and how did you get involved with it?
Yeah, so GraphQL is a way of writing queries to get data in your front-end applications. And it's kind of called it's a query language for your API is the short tagline for it. But it really allows you to have this query language for asking for the data that you need from your data sources. GraphQL doesn't care at all where your data lives. So that's something that's kind of cool about it. You can get it from REST APIs, databases, and you can get it from all those places at one time, actually. So GraphQL allows a lot of flexibility there. Something kind of the unsung feature of GraphQL, which everyone uses all the time, but they don't talk about it as much maybe, is that it gives you a type system for your API too. So It allows you to create a schema, describe all of your API's types, your products, your users. You think about what are actually the fields that we need from our data sources. And then you have this awesome typed API for just making sure that your clients are only asking for the data that they need really in an efficient way. I got into it I think a lot of us have gotten into it this way through React, because GraphQL came out of Facebook and suddenly at every conference there was a GraphQL talk. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't know what this is. And I really am curious about it. And one of the nice things about working with GraphQL is it gives you this in-browser tool called Graphical or GraphQL Playground or the new Apollo Studio now. And this is such an awesome thing that you can use to get into GraphQL right away. So I think a lot of folks are kind of charmed by it day one, as I was, because it feels very fun and easy to get the data from wherever it is. So Graphical, always got to give it a shout out because it's the coolest part of GraphQL, I feel like.
it has really good curb appeal. It's really like flashy from the get-go and sort of draws people in.
Totally.
I'm pretty sure I heard about it for the first time at Chain React.
Oh, yeah. React Native conference.
The first one, maybe.
Yeah, it's got the tooling and everything around GraphQL is super cool. We're going to be talking about that some more for sure.
Of course, the QL makes me think of SQL.
Yeah.
Which was where I got my start programming.
Yeah, I remember some of the kind of like experienced developers that were kind of skeptical of GraphQL were like, oh, they reinvented SQL. Yay. You know, that's not totally true. You know, tell me when you're using SQL from the client, then we'll talk.
But like, if you know what SQL is, that's a really good way to sort of try and understand what GraphQL is. It's like you can write a query to get exactly what you want, but from your API.
Yeah, totally. And you can use both of those together. So some people think GraphQL is here to kill everything. Like there's this idea that we're here to kill REST, we're here to kill SQL, we're here to get rid of everything you know and love. And that's not really true. You can use it with everything.
Surprisingly, everything is not black and white.
Shocking. I agree.
Talking about killing REST, that leads me to my question about when would it be attractive to replace REST with GraphQL and why?
To build on what I just said about not killing REST, I think a lot of the most successful REST to GraphQL migrations have started with GraphQL sort of wrapping around REST. And sometimes people will feel like that's enough. We should stop there because we're getting everything we need out of that. There's nothing that says you have to get rid of REST in order to use GraphQL. However, replacement is just to think about all of your various endpoints. So instead of thinking about endpoints with REST, we're thinking about queries. And with REST, we get these huge payloads of data back as JSON. And sometimes that's a good thing because we're getting the data that we want. But GraphQL allows us to be a little bit more granular about exactly what we need. it also helps us from, this is a React Native podcast, from a component perspective, thinking about how a query maps to the data requirements of your component. So you don't have to fetch all this extra data. You don't have to make as many different HTTP requests. You can just be really specific about what you need. And I think GraphQL or not, the kind of vibe lately with data fetching in our components is, how about we co-locate the requirements of the data alongside the UI? And GraphQL is just a kind of no-brainer there. And I think even if you don't use GraphQL, I think that's a good pattern to think about.
Yeah, I've used it in a React Native app, and I really like how when you're on a certain screen and you only want to pick, you know, let's say we're on the profile page, you want to pick first name and last name and email.
Yeah.
You can pretty much tell your GraphQL API that only return this, but, you know, knowing that your, I guess we're talking about a user profile here, but your user JSON could be fairly large with tokens and other data, which for a mobile app can really bog that down and make a very intensive call. Do you ever see GraphQL, you know, being the default choice over REST, or do you still see them kind of working hand in hand?
I think that right now there's sort of a migration to GraphQL happening, where if you are starting from scratch on a project, people are selecting that from the start. I think that that's been a change since it was announced in 2015, where all of the React enthusiasts of GraphQL, the GraphQL enthusiasts in general, would just kind of make it happen at their company, where they would wrap whatever they needed to or just push it through. But now people are seeing that, hey, Netflix is using this, PayPal is using this, big companies are making big bets on GraphQL, and it feels like a stable enough technology that it doesn't feel as scary to implement from the start. So I do see a lot of people reaching for that as they're building new things in a way that's kind of exciting. It hasn't really always been like that.
So what are your favorite GraphQL JavaScript clients? I know there's a lot out there. I could list a couple, but, you know, Apollo comes to mind and Urkel. What are some of your favorites, and what would you recommend for a React Native app?
I have used Apollo client the most. I've kind of worked in that Apollo stack for the most part, but I know that folks really, really, really like Urkel a lot too. So that and React Query are a couple of dark horses that are sort of like coming through and saying, hey, we're a really powerful solution as well. So those are great. Also, Relay is really awesome. I think actually, if I looked this up yesterday, that Relay and GraphQL were released on the same day at React Conf. And so they're always associated with one another as these Facebook technologies for data fetching. When Relay came out, I sort of didn't really get into it because I felt like this is a little bit too complex. I don't know what's going on here, but I've revisited it and it feels like the new Relay is really cool. So I would say that that's really worth investigating in a way that I wouldn't have recommended maybe a couple years ago, just because I want people to like GraphQL. I don't want them to be freaked out by it. So ultimately, I think Apollo client is really great for my needs. Basically, you use hooks to fetch data. And I know that that may be changing in React as well over the course of the next couple of years. But at the moment, I found it's really cool. And you can use it for queries, which get data, mutations, which change data, and then subscriptions, which are really cool in GraphQL too, which let you work over WebSockets and fetch data in real time. So all are supported, and they're supported in others as well. But I kind of feel very comfortable using that pattern to fetch the data.
Now, does that do any of those also double as your state management or persistence layer?
It definitely can. So Apollo client has these two pieces. It gives you caching. So caching is really important, obviously, for a situation where we don't have endpoints anymore. It was easy to cache REST data because we just have the endpoint, but now we're caching queries. What is this mayhem? So Apollo client gives you a nice cache for that allows you to persist, and React Native and React for the Web have different versions of that. But you basically get that as well as your network interface. So anything you need to communicate with that GraphQL API, it's called an Apollo link for that. So it's a link you would use for HTTP requests or for WebSockets or for offline. And so it gives you a lot of the things that you have to think about without having to think about them as much, which I like personally.
Yeah. And I believe Apollo has also a sort of like component architecture where that component kind of makes that fetch. And I think that's also something pretty cool. So I guess kind of going through what you mentioned, it's more about what your app needs at the end of the day. There's so many clients out there that could kind of do the work for you.
Totally. And I think that all of them share the patterns of associating a component with a query and caching that data. So if I'm your user example from before, if I'm asking for a first name, last name, and email address, I can store that in a cache, persist that cache, and I don't have to keep asking for it. Because sometimes it feels like with GraphQL, are we just making 1,000 HTTP requests? What are we doing here? So a cache is super important and something that Apollo gives you out of the box, Urkel gives you, Relay gives you, because it's so vital to making your app not be a total dud. So,
how well does GraphQL translate to React Native? I know it's mainly, you know, React basis. Do we need a native layer, or is it just, you know, pure JavaScript that we can kind of hook up to our React Native app?
It's pure JavaScript that you can hook up to React Native. So if you have come from a JavaScript, more web-based background, and you have to create a React Native application, you'll find that with Apollo and Relay and Urkel, a lot of those patterns that you're using, a lot of those tools you're using, functions down to the packages you're using, it's all the same. So this is really nice for creating. All you're really doing with GraphQL is creating those queries and creating the connection to your GraphQL API. That's the client part of it. The schema and all that stuff lives on the back end. But as far as how that works with React Native, it's all pretty much the same.
Are there any pitfalls or anything we need to keep in mind while we're kind of hooking it up to a React Native application?
In general, a few things that can be tricky with GraphQL on the client in general is just what you said. So state management and where did we keep this cache? Do we persist it? How long do we persist it? When do we kick out the old records? When do we fetch again? These are all decisions that you can use the defaults, but at some point you're going to have to get in there and be kind of more granular about how you want that data to be refetched. And also pitfalls are error handling. So error handling in GraphQL, I love GraphQL. I don't necessarily love GraphQL error handling because everything seems to give you either it's all broken or it's all good, and you'll get a 200 and you won't have any data and you'll feel like I hate my job. But there's a lot of cool error handling techniques and tools. There's GraphQL errors. There's some new Apollo client configuration options for version 3, which came out fairly recently. And those are things to look at, but I always feel like we could go a little further with those error handling features.
To be fair, I feel that way about most REST APIs that I've ever used. So,
Yeah, totally. So it's not. We bring a lot of the same problems from REST into GraphQL.
My last client didn't return anything except 200 for
good. Yeah, that's great. That
it's feels almost good. Like the problem isn't really the technology.
Totally. Yeah, maybe we may need to look bigger. Think bigger. Yeah.
It's those back end devs.
I can say that.
I was a back end dev. yeah, and there's no really like one size fits all solution to a lot of those things like caching. Like you said, you have to be thinking about how people are using your app and what their expectations are and how you're communicating that on the front end. And we've all used apps where they've done it poorly and you're just like, oh, really? Like, why are you still showing this old data? I just updated it or whatever.
Yeah, all those decisions don't go away. So we have to continue to think about those things.
So besides error handling, is there anything about GraphQL that would make you not choose it, or certain like situations, or that would maybe make GraphQL not an ideal choice?
I think that there can be a tendency to, if you have a database, to want to map that database one-to-one with GraphQL. I always feel a little bit of anxiety about that when I hear about it, just because mapping your database one-to-one with GraphQL gives you all of the imperfections of your database just in GraphQL now. And then you don't get a lot of the benefits of adding that layer. So what I would recommend is, and this is tricky because sometimes it feels really good to just automate the process of generating a schema based on a database, because that is super fast. And that's something that you can do with a tool like Prisma or something like that. I would always recommend that even if you do use a tool that auto-generates a schema, that you take the time to look at that schema and ensure that your clients actually need the data that you're modeling in that schema. Because you know how databases go. They've been around maybe for a while, and there have been some quick fields added that maybe are not in use, or maybe they're not ideal, or they have wild names that make no sense. So I think GraphQL, and I guess programming in general, if we're really striving to be good at our jobs, is all about communication. And those one-to-one maps can sometimes communicate poorly. So,
mm-hmm. See, this is why I don't trust automated things completely. And like, you still need like the human to decide like what has value and what makes sense. So,
Robin, are you saying that just because I told you to use GitHub yes. Copilot?
I was about to say that.
Yes, I am.
This automation stuff. We can't trust it. What are the robots doing?
Oh, wow. Yeah. I have a revolt. Yeah. In databases, it's always easy to add columns. It's much, much more difficult to remove them. And that's something that sometimes you don't have a lot of control over. And so, you know, the backend team's doing their thing and it kind of just accrues cruft. But that's the cool thing about, and I mean, you can do this with REST too, where you sort of like transform the data into what you would expect it to be, things like that. But I guess with GraphQL, in my opinion, you look at it and it's like the inherent nature of it makes you want to transform it into something that is useful to the client, because that's what it's doing. It's really serving the client side of it so much more so than maybe the back end. It's client first, which I think, you know, I appreciate now, even though I did back end for many years. It totally makes sense that the client is driving that forward because it's closer to the user. And what does the user need? There's also security implications with dumping all the fields over. You know, some of the stuff shouldn't be shown on the client. So don't send it along.
Absolutely. That can be really scary. And I think what you said about databases having to remove a field or a column is really tough. Same with GraphQL. As soon as you add a field to a GraphQL schema and a client starts requesting it, that client will demand that field from now on. And so that will break mm-hmm. your queries if you're asking for it. So really thinking through the schema and what is actually required for the client can be really useful. One of the ways that you can do this is to literally create wireframes of what your app or your website looks like, associate those components with a query. And if you're building a schema that has a bunch of different fields that have no representation in any of your UIs, then really think about what you're trying to add.
Speaking of the back end, I was doing a live code streaming with Jesse Martin from Hazura this week, in fact. And of course, Hazura and others like Prisma are kind of like these, you know, really easy, almost Heroku-like, you know, backends for GraphQL. They have their own databases. Hazura, I think, uses Postgres and whatnot. And they kind of integrate them all in a really cool way. You can edit them on, you know, in a browser and things like that. I think that's really cool. What are your thoughts on you know, services like that, platform as a service type things like that?
I think they're great. I think Hasura is really pioneering in their subscriptions. And what I mean by that is the real-time data use cases. Mm-hmm. So I think everything they're working on over there is really exciting from a user perspective, because they're thinking, how do we get this data as fast as possible to every client, which is super cool. So on a similar line, Prisma is really great too. I think that if you are holding your data in a database, these can be really powerful tools. Kind of both of them operate from a resolver first approach, which just means we're thinking about the data first before we think about the schema. Apollo is kind of schema first, where you create a schema to model your types. They go the other way, where they're thinking, how do we create functions that return the data and then develop the schema from that? And I don't think one is better than the other. I think both have their place. Prisma has worked with some huge, huge companies, and so has Hasura. They're modeling data for these big banks and places where these databases have existed for a really long time. So I think putting GraphQL in the picture is yielding a lot of performance benefits for these huge companies. And so that's sort of the different approach there. We're thinking about functions first versus schema first with Apollo, but both are really powerful in the right situations.
You just mentioned performance. Are there any sort of performance gotchas or pitfalls? I mean, like, are we going to be seeing like any bandwidth concerns on mobile, like with a lot of different requests? I know that comes up as a concern quite often.
Yeah, I think the tendency can be to sometimes we'll get working on a great UI, right? We're building our cool app and we start with a really small query that fetches data for a small part of the UI, and we get a lot of performance benefits because we're not overfetching. Over time, sometimes those queries can get larger and a page might need, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 fields. And maybe those fields are pulling data from a bunch of different places. So performance-wise, we always have to think about, where's the data coming from? How long is it taking? What is the most critical data that we need to display? And as your queries get bigger, just by the nature of how your page has growing data needs, there might be times when you find little performance bottlenecks. So a couple tools for that you can look at. Number one is there's a tool called Apollo Studio, and Apollo Studio is free for a lot of their features and then paid beyond that. We know what software is. That's how it works. But I'm explaining all subscriptions. But essentially, this gives you, in addition to schema check-ins and things like that to work better on a team, it gives you metrics for how fast certain fields are performing. So if you have a UI that feels like, oh, this thing is loading super slow, I wonder why, you can look at that and see that the email field is taking X number of seconds to load, and you can start to track that stuff down. Another thing that's really exciting, particularly for React Native developers and front-end developers, is that we have defer and stream coming to the spec really soon. So defer and stream are these GraphQL directives that we can use to incrementally load data. So quick example of what that is. Defer is kind of like lazy loading in a query. So let's say we have some fields at the top of the page that are super important for the user to see right when they load the page. I can load those fields first, and I can defer the rest to load in the background so that it feels like my page is working and that data is coming later. So that's defer. We can incrementally load our data that way. Similarly, there's something else coming to the GraphQL spec called stream. So stream allows you to, let's say we're loading a list of something, a list of posts. We can load the first three posts and it makes it look like, hey, this app is fast. This is cool. And then we can load the rest in the background. So as the queries get bigger, that performance feels like, oh, this is getting trickier because we're waiting on a lot of fields. But Defer and Stream are going to change a lot of that. And those are going to come very soon to the GraphQL spec and then will be implemented by all these different clients and servers.
That's pretty cool. I love that feature. That sounds like it would be very beneficial, like from a UI UX perspective and even just from the performance, right?
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's very sensible and super exciting. So I'm always looking on the repo, like, let's go, I want this. But people are donating their time, so they can take their time. But yeah, it's great.
I always love hearing about performance tooling too, like especially stuff that's like visual or very easy to use, because performance is so often something that people forget about or don't think about or avoid thinking about because they don't know how to even begin. So it's really nice that they're sort of tooling built in. Sort of down the same vein, testing. I know API testing has always been sort of traditionally a pain. Are there any good tools around testing, unit testing, regression testing, GraphQL APIs?
A lot of the testing tools are the testing tools of that language with GraphQL. So GraphQL has all these implementations in various languages. You don't have to use JavaScript to build a GraphQL client or server, but they're traditionally you would test a GraphQL API just with Jest or a React testing library or any of those things. GraphQL lends itself particularly well to testing just because you can test for, let's say you send a query, send an HTTP request with these fields, I expect to get this data back. That's very easy to think through, like how that would work. And that's a pretty cool thing. As far as specific GraphQL testing libraries, I haven't seen a whole lot of that. Please correct me if I'm wrong. If anyone knows of any, I will steal them from you and use them. But I tend to see folks using their favorite testing library that already exists and kind of using that for GraphQL testing. I will say that for mocking data, there are a lot of great built-in tools that you can use. So GraphQL schema is just a list of all of your API's types, right? So if I have a user and I have a query called all users, it just returns a list of those users. A user is a specific type that has an ID and it has a name that's a string and it has an age that's an int, et cetera, et cetera. That lends itself particularly well to mocking. So if I'm working on a React Native app and the backend engineers or whoever's building the GraphQL API, they haven't set up the data sources yet, we can still use that schema and mock the data. So Apollo Server has mocking tools. There's a package called GraphQL Tools that has mocks. And there's a ton of these where you can load some fake data into your prototype and you can get building on that and actually create those queries and then worry about wiring up the data later. You don't have to be held up by the process by which you have to connect all those different data sources.
That's awesome. I feel like mocking data is usually the most time consuming and frustrating part because it's always really like brittle. And so that's cool.
Totally. So literally when you create an Apollo server, you do so in, you could make it one line of code, but usually if you're making it look nice, it's like three. And then you can you can just pass into that constructor a schema and then you can say mocks true. And you got mocks, you're done. You can create your own custom mocks, which is fun. That's cool. And that's the whole thing. But essentially, you don't need to. You can just get going with mocks, colon, true, you're done.
Three lines of code. Let's not get out of hand here. That's,
I know. we should shorten it. I mean, that's a little excessive. I agree.
My question is, can you get GitHub Copilot to write it? Then, you know, then it'll be way easier.
Definitely.
Robin's shaking her head.
She's like, enough is enough.
I come back from leave and all of a sudden the AI is taking my job.
Yeah, exactly. Just trying to run us all out of our careers.
I'm a big fan of TypeScript. So I know you mentioned early that GraphQL does a good job of translating over your types. I'm guessing what that means is when you create your query, you set a type for that query. So, you know, we talked about user, first name, last name, string and then age is a number. Does that automatically translate into the app? So once I do my use query fetch, so whatever application, let's use Apollo, for example, when I get my data back, will that automatically translate down for me in TypeScript?
So you can use your schema to actually generate types using tools like Apollo CodeGen, and there's GraphQL CodeGen from the Guild. They're a very cool organization doing a lot of great open source work. So check out the Guild, the little pitch. I have nothing to do with it. But I think that because we have this type system plugged in, baked into our API, you can use code generation tools to generate types based on that. So that can be then used in your components to ensure that the types in your component are matching the types in your API. So that's one way you can do it. There's also the flip of that. So if you already have a typed UI, you can create a schema from that, which is kind of cool. So Babel Blade and some other tools for going the other way, essentially. We're trying to create types all the way down. And that's something I always tell people who are not that excited about GraphQL but love TypeScript, is that, ooh, you can use everything for code generation and do a lot of cool automated work to ensure that those types are really reaching deep into the stack and making sure that you're, that sounded creepy, but making sure that, you know what I meant, making sure that the application is as strictly typed as possible end to end.
That's pretty cool.
Awesome. And last thing here, we are kind of running out of time. I could ask you questions all day, but what resources would you recommend for people wanting to learn more about GraphQL? Obviously, your book, Learning GraphQL, O'Reilly Media. But do you have other resources as well?
Yeah, definitely. HowToGraphQL.com is an old classic. Not old, but a classic. Old in GraphQL terms, so like 3 years old. And you can there learn full stack GraphQL for free. There's a bunch of cool tutorials there. Hasura has some wonderful tutorials on their website. Mm-hmm. I would highly recommend those. Those are sort of overlooked in favor of others. So definitely check those out. There's a React Native tutorial that I just looked at yesterday that was recently updated. So that's a cool one there. I would also recommend Apollo Odyssey. So Apollo Odyssey is another free learning path that you can look at to kind of put together your full stack application. They're working on one for Apollo Federation where you can create GraphQL microservices. That's coming soon. So there's a lot of free, great resources out there on GraphQL, and GraphQL.org has some links to all of those as well if you want to check out the official documentation.
When I was first getting into GraphQL, I did go through howtographql.com, and they did a very good job of explaining it. And that was also my intro to TypeScript. So I kind of did it all in one, and that was really good.
Yeah, if you're looking to learn TypeScript, I feel like learning GraphQL and TypeScript together makes a lot of sense, because some of the vocabulary translates unions and interfaces and things like that. So a lot of cool stuff.
And obviously, buy Eve's book. That is the place to start, I think. And you know, go check that out. We'll have a link to it in the show notes. That's where to start learning GraphQL. Very cool. I'm gonna have to wrap up here, unfortunately. So if you'd like to nerd out more about React Native, of course, check out my Twitch stream, rn.live or youtube.infinite.red. I'll probably be doing some GraphQL stuff, more stuff, because I obviously had Jesse on, and we'll have other guests. You can also join our Slack community at community.infinite.red. There's a lot of GraphQL people in there, and check that out. Where can people find you? Robin, by the way, welcome back. Where can people find you online?
As always, I'm at Robin_Hines on Twitter, and I'm actually tweeting again. I took a break from tweeting, just like I took a break from working.
Aren't those the same thing?
Yes. The ultimate hard work is tweeting. Yes.
Yeah. If you look at my Twitter thread, that's what you think. Yeah, welcome back. It's great to have you back. Mazen, where can people find you online?
At Mazen Chami.
Perfect. And Eve?
You can find me at Eve Porcello and at moonhighway.com.
Perfect. And you can find me at Jamin Holmgren on Twitter. You can, of course, follow our Twitter account, React Native Radio. It's at React Native RDIO. Thanks so much, Eve, for joining us today. It was awesome to have you on, and just learning more about GraphQL. We're gonna have to have me on again, hopefully, if you are up for that. As always, thanks to our producer and editor, Todd Wirth, our assistant editor and episode release coordinator, Jed Bartoski, our social media coordinator, Missy Warren, our designer, Justin Husky, and our guest coordinator and official musician, Derek Greenberg. Thanks to our sponsor, Infinite Red. Check us out at infinite.red/reactnative. Special thanks to all of you for listening today. I really appreciate it. We all really appreciate it. It makes this worthwhile. Appreciate also all the love that we heard. People asking when Robin's going to be back. Reminder, we are hiring careers.infinite.red. See you all next time.